Hello.
Yes, it's working. So this actually may be quite a short talk. There isn't a lot to say on this subject that Amlanadi isn't going to say next week. So I'll need to give you aspects of this. I mean, it is. We are talking about a potential that we all have, and that we all know about. Actually, it's confidence. Essentially, that's an English translation, and English translations are always a bit problematic because there is no such thing as a real translation. You can't really translate very well from one language to another, particularly from Pali and Sanskrit. Particularly the concepts of Buddhism don't translate well into English, just because the background those languages evolved from is so very different. So you always have to be careful about that. So this, the word is Shraddha, and it's often translated confidence, trust. But the best translation really is faith. The trouble is with faith is that all the associations we have with that word are theistic, you know. And so at least a lot of the associations we have with that word are theistic. So it isn't just confidence, it's more than that. Confidence is including, but confidence is too subjective. It's too much about me feeling confident or not feeling confident. This quality of Shraddha or faith, I'm going to use the word faith, is something that's drawn out of us somehow. It's a developed emotion, you could say. I mean, it is a state of inner confidence and clarity, contains clarity, and lack of doubt and lack of hesitation. It is all of those things, but it's more than that. It's our response to what is good. As I explained a bit down in the shrine, it's our response to what's good. And it's our response to higher values as well, you could say. And when we have responses like that, we feel good. We do feel really uplifted by it. It's our response to what's true and our response to what's inspiring. And faith makes it sound religious, right? Faith makes it sound religious. It can be connected to religion. That's not a problem. But actually, the thing we're talking, the emotion or the mind state we're talking about is completely independent of any structure like that. It's a natural response to the good. And our wishing to participate in that somehow. So you can see it can be religious, but it's not necessarily so. So when you see somebody being kind or helpful or courageous or really speaking the truth, perhaps when that's quite a difficult thing to do, when you know about that or see it, you think, oh, good for them. I'm so glad they said that. And it buoys you up, has an uplifting effect, you know. So that's it. That's faith in this sense. So I'll try as we go to remove the religious or the theistic, more accurate, theistic associations. Basically, this isn't faith in God. It's faith in our own capacities. It's a kind of a deep reassurance that we have the capacity to grow and awaken. It's as though moments like this put us in touch with something that's already been there, but it's we feel incredibly encouraged and motivated by something inside us. And these things are discussed in a Buddhist tradition called the Abhidharma, which might have been mentioned quite a bit in these talks, I don't know. Ratnaprabha is shaking his head. I'm going to have a little excursion here into kind of Buddhist tradition, you could say. And to explain this term Abhidharma, the teachings, the Buddhist teachings, were at some point divided into three, what they call baskets. Three baskets, presumably, because when they finally wrote down the oral tradition onto palm leaves, in somewhere or other, I'm not quite sure how they did that, but they wrote them on palm leaves, and presumably these were stored in baskets. Yeah, and a basket is a pitaka, Sanskrit or Pali. And sometimes you'll see the teaching referred to as the tree pitaka, or the three baskets, right? And the three pitakas are firstly the suttas, the discourses of the Buddha. And the suttas are the stories about the Buddha or his disciples teaching the Dharma. It's the stories about that. How this teaching came about. You hear about some circumstance or other, and the Buddha decides to give a teaching. And you hear that whole story. And there's thousands of these suttas, and they're arranged in five collections, five sets of books. And we've got all of these in the library downstairs. So you get the story, you get the circumstances, often very interesting, and then you get the actual teaching that's given. And then you might also get the story about how the teaching was received, and there may be something coming out of that as well. So that was one kind of Buddhist scripture, the suttas. And then you get something called the Vinaya. The Vinaya means the discipline. This is mostly for monastics, but it applies to our practice as well to some extent. It's the stories, again, stories about the circumstances in which the Buddha found it necessary to make a rule for the monastics. He found it necessary to say, actually, we're not going to do that anymore. And he tells the story of how that came about. So again, you get the story, you get the circumstances, often fascinating details about something that went wrong somewhere or other. And then you get the Buddha saying, well, actually, we're going to do it like this now, okay? And there are three books of Vinaya. I don't think we've got those in the library. We haven't, but we should get them, yeah? And then the third basket, the third pitaka, which this one has six volumes, is called the Abhidharma. And the Abhidharma kind of means something like the higher teaching, something like that. Or maybe it's kind of overview teaching. And this is just Dharma. There's no stories. It's just Dharma, without the stories. So this is where the tradition, the Buddhist tradition, stores all its discussions about how teachings work in practice. This is where you'll find the really clear inquiries about the nature of different mental states, like Shraddha. Yeah? That's the connection, faith. So it can be really instructive to read and study how great teachers of the past, like Xuan Zang, for example, who lived in the 5th century in China, how he looked into the nature of these experiences, which we all have, but which can be looked into and understood in tremendous depth, in really going to the relevance of these states and the uses of these different states that we have. Xuan Zang is just one commentator on the Abhidharma, but his work is especially highly regarded as one of the main Mahayana commentators from the Yogacara point of view. And we value his work in Sri Ratna. And his most famous work is this. I've got some props for this talk. It's called the Doctrine of mind only or mere consciousness. Not a very good translation. It's half in Chinese. It's a translation from. This is a translation from the Chinese, and it's got a great picture of Swan Song in it. That's, there he is, and he's one of the things he's famous for was bringing as a young man doing the incredible journey, very dangerous journey to India from China, partly across land and partly by ship. And then training up in a monastery in India. Maybe he was at Nalanda, I'm not quite sure. Looked around and probably nodded, he's nodding. And coming back loaded with scriptures. And this is him with this kind of elaborate rucksack type of thing on his back. This is how he's usually portrayed in pictures. You see him with this big rucksack full of sutras, probably. Sutras and Abhidharma commentaries and goodness knows what. He's kind of very determinedly walking along with this thing. So, Swan Song. And this text was basic to a book called Mind in Buddhist Psychology. This rather dog-eared old book I've got that Sangharaksha did a seminar on in the 70s. I'm telling you all this because this is like our tradition of scriptural study and our tradition of looking into these things. And he did this seminar, and then 20 years later, he produced this, about 95. This is a really good book. It's called Know Your Mind. This is worth looking into if you're interested in this stuff. And much more recently, I think last year, Subhuti produced this book, Mind in Harmony, which is the same, it's all the same territory, all these four books, they're all the same territory, some more accessible than others. This is a very good book. I really recommend Subhuti's book. I really hope that as the new centre really gets going, it's starting to get going now, isn't it, a bit? And I think as we get going, we'll get the library going and probably do more study events and have people down there looking into this stuff, mining all these Dharma texts. Anyway, I don't want to spend too long on this, but in Abhidharma, this detailed understanding of the workings of the mind in relation to liberation, not just psychology, but it's like the psyche in relation to freedom and liberation. This is the particular angle of Buddhism. You know, there's a lot of analysis of the dark stuff, the darker workings, craving, hatred, envy, delusion, etc. But there's also a lot of thought and observation of the mind as it becomes liberated, as our minds become liberated. You know, we all have our moments. Those moments can add up to liberation. And positive mind states start emerging. And the very first of these, the one that really kind of starts us off, it kind of leads us in a way, is this quality of faith or shraddha, confidence, trust. And the main book, this actually, Swan Song's book, is a commentary on something by Asanga. And in that book is this little encapsulation of what shraddha is. And it says, what is trust? It uses the word trust. What is trust? This is Asanga speaking. It is full and firm conviction with regard to that which exists. Serene, that's one thing. Serene joy relating to good qualities, that's two. And eagerness for capability. Funny word, I'll explain. Its function consists of giving a basis to will. So this is very incredibly concise, typical of Indian writers, incredibly concise. You really have to tease out the meaning. So trust here is conviction regarding what exists, joy regarding good qualities, and eagerness for capability. I've mentioned these things already in the shrine room downstairs. There's three things we respond to. What exists, that is the nature of reality. There's good qualities, that's the goodness of others. And there's capability, that is our own capacity for awakening. So first of all, our conviction regarding what exists. When we hear about the kind of fundamental Dharma teachings, we hear that everything arises on the basis of conditions, for example. Or we hear that, and we notice also in our experience, that everything is impermanent and changing. That gives us a perspective, a certain perspective, that nothing lasts. You know, or we might hear, or our attention might be drawn to, the fact that nothing has a substantial essence. You know, these are really deep, profound teaching that need a lot of applications. But sometimes these teachings hit us like a thunderbolt. They hit us, and we really see that it's true. You know, well, this really opens something up in us. It might not be a case of seeing that it's true with our head, but hearing that might open up something in our heart, and we realise, wow, that really is something. And this is faith. This is deep faith arising. That when we recognise that it really is so, it really is true. This is the deep shraddha, deep confidence, deep faith. We're moved. We're moved by the truth somehow. It's not something thought through. We're definitely moved in the seat of our being. So that is shraddha. This is the one aspect of it. So that's one. And then two, joy regarding good qualities. A Sangha writes that in the 4th or 5th century sometime in India, right? Joy regarding good qualities. Essentially, as I said at the start, shraddha is just our heart response to the good and the true. And we all have that. You know, we all have that. It might get distorted somehow, sometimes. It might get often quite distorted, actually. We might get a bit cynical, for example. We might fall into the view that people aren't really good. You might often think that, you know. They're just putting on a show to cover up something that's much nastier, and that really fundamentally people are quite nasty, you know. It's easy to fall into that view, especially if you get very disappointed. Yeah. A lot of people actually get habituated to that distorted kind of a view. And actually, they're not wrong that people do often put on a bit of a show of being good. It's socially unacceptable not to look good, right? So people will do that. But it doesn't really mean that they actually are nasty, that human beings are fundamentally bad or you know, flawed in some sense. I think people often do take advantage of others' goodwill, but the deeper response is the positive response of appreciation. People appreciate it when others are kind to them. People appreciate the good. So normally, when we see someone else doing something worthwhile, someone helping someone or something like that, there's this sense of uplift. Or you read in the news, or you might read in history, about some outstanding act of courage or incredible generosity. And that can be very moving, inspiring. So that's shraddha. That's our capacity, our inner capacity to be moved in that way, in big ways and in small ways. And when it happens, it can just make our day, or it can change our life. You know, there are degrees of it. Because it's our response. Wait a minute. Then the third thing is eagerness for capability. What Asanga mentioned there. This is really about our own potential, our own capacities. This is really quite important, actually. We could be moved by the fact that we realise there's something, there's a lot of potential inside us. And this can be really fundamentally moving when we realise that we can trust that. We can really trust that we have these capacities. And we hear all this stuff about the Dharma. We hear all about, you know, impermanence, emptiness, or compassion. And it all seems a bit out there. It all seems a little bit abstract and to do with other people and a little bit kind of out of our league somehow. But there are times when we realise, actually, that is talking about me. This is talking about ourselves. And this is moving. We think, oh, yeah, I can do this. I can do this through my practice. Or I can change myself in small ways and big ways or whatever. And we realise that Dharma isn't something remote, but Dharma is about us. It just needs more attention to bring it out. And it's as simple as that. And this is deeply moving. This again is faith in that third sense. That's really all I've got to say. I told you it was simple. I told you there was only a small aspect to it. But it is very profound. I hope you get some of that. I'm going to leave it there, actually. See if we've got some discussion can come out of that. I've got a little paragraph here, but I'm not going to, it's too boring. I'd rather stick with the important stuff. That we have this capacity to have, in a way, it's like faith in ourselves, isn't it? Or faith in people, or faith in the truth, you could say. Those three things. So you can see how it's a natural human quality. You can see how it's completely innate. It's something that's just there and can be awakened. And perhaps you can also see that coming out of that one quality of faith can come lots and lots of other qualities, because you kind of apply that to your life and lots more stuff comes about, which no doubt Amlal is going to tell us about next week. Any responses to that? I'd quite like to know if you recognise any of this.
Can I say something? I thought it was really excellent. Thanks very much. And it really helped me understand a bit more about this concept, because I first heard about it at the East London Buddhist Centre about 2 years ago. I went to a talk by the Indian chap, I can't remember his name, but he was really, really passionate about Shraddha. And I kind of, he started again with this idea. It was difficult to translate, but I guess for me, what resonated was this idea of something that you experience, particularly me in meditation states, where you get a moment of lucidity. It could only be maybe 2 seconds and an hour sit, but there's something in that that is so precious. And it's like you can't put the toothpaste back to the tube. That's the sort of the thing that comes to mind. It's like once you've had that, you can never forget it. And it's kind of... Until I had that, I thought this idea of working towards awakening was interesting. It was a great idea.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah,
but it had no real existence. Yeah. It's nothing. It wasn't something I could ever really experience. Mm. But I think that those kind of tiny moments of lucidity when I've meditated, and it happens once every like 20 meditations now probably, but that, it gives me the motivation for the 19 others where I don't have anything and all I have is like turbulence and, you know, just working through stuff. So that's kind of what I got. But the way you broke it down into sort of, it's a sort of eagerness for more capacity. Yeah. It's like, if I can get this now, if I continue, I could get beyond this and really see things and but also respond to what is good, because I think there's something really blissful about those states. So yeah, no, it was really, thanks.
It's not necessarily blissful. That can certainly can be. Yeah. It can be just clarity.
Yeah.
You just see, yeah.
Yeah.
That can be a bit like a light going on.
Yeah.
Should we be holding on to the moments of bliss?
I don't think you need to. There's no need to. It's just naturally motivating. Probably if you hang on to it, you're hanging on to something in the past. Yeah. I mean, you can remember it. You know, you think that really happened, but you can never kind of recapture a previous moment, can you? It's just by definition in the past.
No, but should that be our motivation to do more meditation? That's what I meant. Should we kind of be, because it's all, as a Buddhist, it's all about letting go, not gaining things, isn't it? So if we say that, you know, I've had a blissful, you know, meditation or blissful, I don't know, a few seconds or few, you know, whatever, should that be our motivation?
I think we can make a distinction between what's blissful and faith. It's not necessarily the same thing. So I think what you're talking about isn't necessarily a kind of moment of bliss, although you probably associate it with pleasure. But it isn't about the pleasure, it's about the truth. It's about the truth of it, and so that motivates in a different way. You know you can't... You know, it's irrelevant whether you recapture that moment, because you see something that's real and true.
Yeah. Isn't it also about bringing it out into life and showing compassion to someone and getting the good feeling of doing something for someone else?
It might come out like that, yeah.
Sort of inspiring, feeling that inspiration.
It depends what kind of person you are. I mean, it probably will, you know, it's going to manifest in that way, but who knows? Ah.
I was just thinking about, as you were talking about, courage.
Courage.
Yes, and when you were talking to us, because I think I've had some experiences where I thought, you know, maybe I could try and do this or attempt something or try to be in a certain way. But then it would change the way that I see myself and the way that other people see me. And then what, you know? So it seems like if you try and take a step into some kind of confident move or mental state, because I'm quite nervous, I don't like talking about it.
Then
it takes a lot of courage. Such as me talking in front of lots of
people. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it means that I then become a person who can talk in front of people.
Yes.
But that's a very small example. But, I mean, I've recently had an example where I have to do something, and I did it in a different way from how I normally do it. It's something in my job, and it was successful, so I now know
right.
that I can do something in a way that I didn't think I could before.
Yes. Yes, that's definitely about confidence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Courage.
Well, you play violin or viola or something in front of thousands of people, but it's hard to talk. Yeah.
But that was really, it was courage.
It's courage, yeah.
I think the idea makes me think of a similar thing of like having the faith to actually do something that you feel like you can't, sort of thing, and then. That energy spurs you to do more, whether it is in meditation or in life or whatever it is. It's a really, thanks for the talk, it's really, really inspiring actually to hear you talk about it, because I don't know anything about it. So
we do know about it. And I mean, in a way, it's just something that's innate within us, isn't it, really? I mean, don't you recognise it?
But you can lack confidence.
Yeah.
And lack faith in yourself and what you're doing.
Yes.
But to have, I forgot the name, Shraddha.
Shraddha,
Sounds like that. Yeah. That would make you do things. The lack of that stops you from doing things.
Yes, I think that's
so. Stop you from talking in front of someone, or stop you
from
saying what is the truth, or telling someone how it is. When you said earlier, like, everyone's like, oh yeah, I'm glad that person said that.
I'm glad they said
that. And that person has got a good, whatever, Shraddha. that word that I can't say.
But, yeah, I can't say that. Yes.
I just want to share a little thing. I was sharing with Dhamma before. A couple of months ago here, I met a person first time in the shrine room. Because I generally, when I finish my meditation, I'm still in the shrine room. So when I finish my meditation and I saw one lady was sitting like that. So I let her sit. And then I went to her and said to her, "Are you okay?" And when I saw her face, she was crying. And I just gave her a hug and I said, "Whatever happening to you this moment, I can see you are quite sad and stressed. Everything will be fine in the end, you know. You will find the space and whatever happening to you." And she told me that she broke up with her boyfriend and whatever. That moment, somehow she opened her heart to me. And I just gave her a hug and I said, "Just trust in yourself and, you know, it will pass. Everything passes because everything is impermanent. So that will go, though it seems like end of the world." And that was that. And after she didn't stay for after the, and I didn't see her. A couple of weeks ago, I think, Meera, I was chatting to you or someone else. And I saw one lady came and sit next to me. I have some neurological problems, so my memory is very bad. I think I know her, but I didn't make up. And she said, "Hello." And she was so happy. And the joy I can see within her. And the glow and everything. And then I realized, oh, she's the same lady. Yeah. And she gave me a hug. And she said, "You are absolutely right. Things are changing. And I'm quite positive and this." And then I, because our open day was coming, so I said, "Why don't you come to the open day and you then find out that what practice you like to do or, you know." That is the story. But for me, that gave me more Shraddha.
It's your practice.
You know, to see. Yeah. And I felt when I was home such a bliss. And I said, "Oh my goodness, Miss, look at this center. Giving so many people hope, this dharma, you know." So for me, it was something very special for my Shraddha. So I just wanted to share this incident that, sometimes you are just lost, and when you are here, and You gain something. This something opened, like you just said that we all have, we think certain person is bad, but each and every one of us have that seed.
It's a seed, yeah. It's a quality that actually we all experience at times.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is to recognize it, you know, because it's worth nurturing.
Yes.
It's a good thing to recognize as
that
a good
seed,
thing.
Yes.
That's it, really. That's it. It's like a bit of a gateway. Just if there aren't any more questions, I think there probably is just one or two things left, but after that we'll go down and do a little sit before we finish.
I'm just thinking about what's in common between those three things. So your response to the truth, your response to the good that you see in others.
And
then your response to your own potential,
your own good, if you could say
your own good in a way. And I was thinking, I don't know if this works, but it seems that all of those things are sort of bigger than me, in a way. They take me outside myself somehow, don't they? So recognizing all of those things is a way of not being so preoccupied with my just immediate
needs. It takes you out of yourself.
Yeah. It takes me out of myself. Mm. Yes. So maybe that's a mark of Shraddha. It's sort of something that takes you out of yourself to something in a way that is more of a a greater value.
There's a little bit of an insight quality.
There's a
little bit of
an insight quality to it, yeah.
Insight suggests absolutely you were internal.
That's true, yes.
Perhaps paradoxical to that.
Yeah. Well, in the insightful in the sense that it goes beyond self.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But I mean, you know, when you said it was like when you deeply have the sense, yes, that's right.
Yes.
You deeply know. So you haven't rationalised it.
Yeah, it comes from the heart, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of paradoxically outside yourself, but actually also inside yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think Sangha actually just said somewhere that Shivanda was about us. Mm. What's transcendental and with us responding to what's transcendental out there, whether it's through the Buddha or through other people, through teachings, whatever, that those qualities, that they're sort of universal, really spiritual qualities that we have within us that we resonate with.
Yes.
And I think that would be another thing that keeps those three things in common.
Yes.
Mm. I mean, my own experience, going back to what you were saying, Kampna, is there's a lot about faith that's not based on belief but on experience.
Experience.
So you have an experience of something in the Dharma actually working, and in your practice actually working, and then the more that happens, the more confidence you get in the Dharma, but also in yourself as a practitioner, and in your potential.
Exactly.
So if you know this has actually happened, oh, well, then maybe all this other stuff will happen,
you know. Okay, then.
Could we have a couple of washing up volunteers?
Oh, great.
Thank you very much. And if you're dana on the way out, don't forget to gift aid your dana if you possibly can. It's really helpful.